Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, a community where students are invited to learn actively, lead courageously, and live purposefully for a lifetime of impact. More about Luther College at luther.edu.
Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
I think that I shall never see a thing quite like my Christmas tree. It's sparse and puny, but it's mine and it's green, and like all my trees before it, the prettiest I've ever seen. Welcome to Spectrum West, where the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin congregates and converses. My name is Al Ross, and on this week's episode, you'll be able to listen in on conversations with Dr. Gary Schwartzoff, the guy who leads the Master Singers through their rehearsals, their concerts, and this year, through their trials and tribulations. We'll let you know how they're faring without concerts and what they're doing to compensate. We've been so focused on all things COVID for so long that it's possible to lose sight of other things that matter and people who need our help for reasons other than pandemic. This time of year is both tough and touching, and Lutheran Social Services has a big job all year round because, as their name indicates, they're in the business of serving people. Joe Chafee is Vice President of Community-Based Services, and she provides a look inside this important safety net for so many. And we begin with an important update. We heard about the Midwest Artist Academy shortly after the venture was announced. Author and collegiate educator B.J. Hollers had the notion, drew up some blueprints, then worked to get it on the runway. It's an experience for high school-aged people planned for this summer. They've been putting together and distributing promotional materials, and they're at the stage where engaging with prospective attendees is what it's all about. BJ and I spoke just the other day. Let's redefine the Midwest Artist Academy. What's the idea?
Well, the basic idea is it's a transformative pre-college experience for 14 to 17-year-old artists throughout the Midwest. We got all kinds of arts represented, dance, theater, music, visual art, and writing, and the hope is to bring 50 young people together with incredible mentors and do our best to create a collaborative showcase by the end of the week.
Can you go back to when this came to your mind, or was it something someone suggested to you, or... Because I imagine you just lying there at night looking up at the ceiling and saying, what else can I do? And and my life isn't busy enough. Has this been in the back of your mind for a while?
You know, it's weird how these things emerge. And I think the truth is ever since I was a camp counselor when I was 18 years old, I kind of began to recognize teaching moments beyond the classroom that can be so formative for young people. So I think around all those campfires kind of got me thinking about it. Then a summer or two ago, I went to Ireland and I taught some young high school age writers, and some of the instructors and I looked at each other and said, how could we replicate this in America? What could we do for Midwesterners in particular who often feel overlooked or like their art doesn't matter? And we decided to try to create this Midwest Artist Academy.
Is it going to feel camp-like?
You know, everything that I'm involved in sort of feels camp-like. You know, there's always a campfire at some point throughout the week. But okay. But I certainly want to have that everyone's a part of something larger mentality, that idea of like anyone can stand up there and sing a song or strum guitar or just kind of feel like, you know, the whole world's not watching. This is a place for us to kind of collectively work and feel comfortable in our skin.
Okay, so what's the physical plant?
Absolutely. Well, our plan is that we will be on the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire campus. We've got classrooms, we've got dorms, we've got outdoor and indoor spaces, and then we will be working toward a final show, hopefully at the Pablo Center. And if the COVID situation doesn't allow for that, we'll make some adjustments and do it on the UW-Eau Claire campus.
Can you describe, in a nutshell, a typical day?
Absolutely. Part of what we want to do is we want to create, collaborate, and celebrate. And so that's kind of how our day breaks down. Every morning in classes of 10, our students will work closely with a mentor. This is someone who is a professor or a practicing artist. They'll do that from 8:30 until noon. Then we'll have some lunch. Then we'll have some afternoon kind of mini group work with different artists and instructors beyond their chosen discipline. And then in the evenings, we're going to have more artistic events, taking advantage of all the cool activities that are already going on in Eau Claire on summer nights, like Blues in the Park, it sounds like summer concerts, and outdoor cinema, and on and on.
Are these people, are they going to be identifiable as a group? Will they have like a uniform, a t-shirt?
Well, thanks to Ambient Inks, we will definitely have some pretty cool t-shirts.
Cool. So when you show up at Tuesday Night Blues, we'll know the group has arrived.
You'll know, you'll see us in mass, that's for sure.
But there's a lot of things to see that are neat in Eau Claire proper. What about free time? Will they have time to, or will you introduce them to some of the more natural things going on in town?
Well, it's a great question. And our theme is actually kind of the convergence of art and earth. So we really want to take full advantage of kind of the natural landscape that's already kind of built in around here. I feel like there's not enough hours in the week to give these Midwestern artists, young people, every opportunity that our region has to offer them. But certainly we'll be hiking Putnam Trail and checking out the river, going to Artisan Forge and checking out the artists there, talking to some local comic book artists, going to the archive to see some Robert Frost materials, on and on and on. There's just so much to do, and I want to kind of jam-pack it all in so that these young people can leave not just with a better understanding of art, but also how to make a life doing it.
BJ Hollers is our guest here on Spectrum West. Professor, UW Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley Writers Guild, and I determined when I was putting my notes together here, BJ, that you're getting to the point now where there's going to be too much as a subhead after I, after I say your name. You know, you got to kind of slack up a little bit or just make sure we have it all, and we won't have time for much more of a conversation because we'll be listing all of your credits, but that's up to you, and that's who you are. Now, we should point out that this is by no means a solo act. This isn't a BJ Hollers thing. You have partnered with some good people. Tell us about that.
Oh, so many good people. And if there's one thing I can impress upon folks today, this is an Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and beyond initiative. So I feel like we've kind of been building toward this artistic moment for the past several years here. But rather than just supporting the adult artists, now's our chance to support the next generation of artists. So I'm really encouraging those local businesses to step up and help us do that. And so we have lots of great partners, of course. We have Pablo. We have the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, Eau Claire Foundation, all kinds of great folks who have been involved. Ambient Inks, I mentioned earlier. Mark Court Motors gave us a wonderful gift. Deb Becker, there's so many great people, and they're all kind of chipping in small ways, and that's just so helpful. I think the one last piece of the puzzle that maybe your listeners can help me out with, since we have the location and we have the staff and we even have the money, All we're missing are the students. So we need to find these 50 engaged high school aged artists. They don't have to be the best. They simply have to be excited about the chance to learn. And once we find those 50 students and they apply by February 1st, we'll be in great shape.
Now, your dates are July 11th through 18th. And in parentheses on my notes, I wrote, you hope. Are there contingencies for what we don't know?
You know, there always are right now. And so we're certainly figuring out what an online model might look like, or if we kind of make it fewer participants in person, or what we might do. So there's a lot of flux still. But last I heard, the university is interested in renting the space this summer, and we're all very bullish about the possibility of this kind of being the light at the end of the tunnel, especially for young people. And so we are really moving full steam ahead with that in mind. And we think that kind of collaborative in-person experience will really be a wonderful way to kind of help lift and bring these young people to a better place where they can celebrate their work together.
Yeah. Again, given what we don't know, at least at this point, the first Midwest Artist Academy could very well be very different than subsequent events in normal years. You are planning an annual, yes?
That's the plan. And, you know, I think so much of this depends on how we face these headwinds this year. And so, I mean, I'm up at 4:30 in the morning trying to send the email and do the social media and reach out to as many partners as I can. And so teachers, businesses, whomever it might be, that's sort of what we're doing now in the hopes that this can become an annual event here in Eau Claire.
Okay. Now, I've seen videos where the mentors that you've lined up, some of them anyway, talk about their early years and what they're going to bring to the event. That's kind of a neat thing to do because, you know, a lot of times when you have someone standing up in front of a master class or any kind of a group where there are young people present and you're putting the person that's at the head of the class up on a pedestal. It's good to know they, at one time, were doing what you young people were doing.
Absolutely. We are all about lowering the bar. Art can be kind of intimidating, you know, but we want to make it very clear that our instructors, even though they literally come from all over the world and have been all over national TV and all over the place doing their art, they're just normal people, you know, doing the same thing that we're all trying to do, which is continue to make something beautiful. And so, people like Arthur Grothy, who many folks know locally, the professor at the University of Theater, you know, he started out as dirty laundry in the play Cinderella. And I think he had a role as Jesus in one of the Christmas pageants when his dad was a pastor. And so I think a lot of folks kind of get their start as the understudy or the person in the back of the scene or whatever. But from there, we can all grow. And so that's just one example of the humble beginnings that ultimately kind of spurred the passion to keep at it.
And Jo Allen Burke talked about an art teacher that she had that made a difference in her life. And Chayu, mm-hmm. her story was exceptionally interesting because she had a real taskmaster for a piano teacher, if I remember the context correctly. And she went home and started crying at the dinner table. And her mother said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "Well, I'm getting pushed kind of hard." I guess that all, yeah, I guess. Sure, it turned out nice. And we all look back and we had people who at that time in our lives we perceived as being a little more harsh than they needed to be. However, they had probably love in their heart and just the betterment of the next generation on their minds. What's your personal story?
Oh, man. Well, it's funny you ask because mine very much aligns with Chayu's. I also was actually in college. I worked really hard on this paper, and I turned it in, and the teacher wrote in the comments that my writing was a disgrace to myself and my classmates. Devastated. I was devastated. All of this, by the way, because I put an apostrophe in the wrong place. It was absurd. She was clearly having a very bad day, but I went back to my dorm room. I opened my course catalog. I started looking at like pre-med or pre-law, sure. Trying to figure out what in the world I could do with my life. But that day I made a decision and said, look, I'm going to work twice as hard, whatever it takes. And so whether she meant to or not, that teacher helped me get to where I needed to be, though, of course, the academy and I would never do that sort of thing to a student. We are so exactly. Far away from that. We're a very supportive place. But for me, it was sort of what I needed to do to fight back against that negativity.
Well, I have to follow up.
What do you got?
Did that female come around eventually and say, yeah, you're not bad?
You know, it's a weird story. Years later, when I was in graduate school, she actually submitted an essay to a magazine that I was the editor in. And so it was a really strange power shift, and ooh. I had no control over the piece. It ended up not getting published, but that had nothing to do with me.
Sure,
but
I did send the rejection letter,
and you know what? It felt okay sending that rejection letter, I got to say. It's kind of small of me, but after what she put me through, I didn't mind licking that envelope and popping it in the mailbox.
Well. We're on the phone with B.J. Hollers. We're talking about the upcoming first Midwest Artist Academy. It's an exciting venture, ladies and gentlemen. You talked about the young people between 14 and 17 who are invited to participate. There are many of them out there and way past our broadcast signal who won't know anything about it, so they'll have to find out in other ways. But there are questions, obviously, and you are offering one-on-one appointments if they want to learn more. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. If you go to MidwestArtistAcademy.org, there's an easy feature right on the homepage where it says, you know, schedule a one-on-one. And you click on that and you find a time and boom, there we are on Zoom chatting. You can also send an email, info@MidwestArtistAcademy.org. There's all sorts of ways to get in touch. And I think that's been our biggest struggle, trying to present what this will be to folks who've never seen it done before. You know, this is our first year. So the more we can kind of talk to people individually or classrooms or whatever it may be, the more we can kind of help paint a picture for the coming summer.
And visiting that website will also make them part of a network that will receive news and updates, yes?
Certainly can. If you insert your email on that homepage near the bottom, it says subscribe. You can get on our email list. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram and even TikTok. We even got a TikTok to try to appeal to these 14 to 17-year-olds. So if you want to laugh, imagine professor of English trying to do TikTok stuff.
Yeah.
But we're getting it done. We're reaching our people.
I have to admit, TikTok is still very Greek to me. I don't think I'll ever be a TikToker, if that's the...
I'm pretty sure I'm in that boat with you, but you know what? I'm sure doing my darndest.
Yeah. That's B.J. Hollers. He's a busy person. One more thing to juggle, or outside of your full-time job of educator, is this kind of the focus of your attention right now, or are you just taking all the balls and continuing to juggle them all?
You know, I picked a heck of a time to try to start something like this. I mean, as we speak right now, my kids are homeschooling virtually upstairs. I'm trying to do it in the computer with my own students in terms of the guild. We also have that and this. So it's more than I ever dared imagine. But here's the good news. Every listener out there can really help me out simply by reaching out to one high school-aged artist or a teacher or a friend. And if everyone does that, my job gets a whole lot easier and I can sleep a whole lot later. So grateful for your help.
And attendance at something like this would be a wonderful way for all of us, especially the young people who have had to, you know, do things virtually. And then come summer, here we have this wonderful blossoming, literally, but then blossoming in a way, speaking hopefully here, this could be the very first thing they do that is completely different than the entire past year.
And it would be so refreshing. And on the other side of it, too, I mean, these young people who will be here, these 50 inaugural students, they're going to shape our culture for years to come. So we really need each other. And the good news for them and their parents is that the cost is pretty minimal, $650 for the entire all-inclusive week. But over 70% of folks probably will get a half-price discount. So $325 is what a lot of folks are going to pay for room, board, everything you have, instruction. And you can't beat that with a stick.
No. Finally, you're a writer. Have you been documenting this weird stuff in some pandemic prose, or what are you doing?
I have. In March, I started a project through the Guild called the Hope is the Thing Project. And it was kind of based off of Emily Dickinson's poem, Hope is the Thing with Feathers. And I asked writers across the state, tell me where your hope is right now. The fruits of that labor are on the CV Writers Guild website. Just click on Hope Project. But more excitingly, in the fall, a brand new book is coming out through Wisconsin Historical Society Press. It's called Hope is the Thing, Wisconsinites on Persistence in Times of Pandemic. So I edited that book, and I can't wait to share it with Wisconsinites. We have so many incredible writers, from middle schoolers to octogenarians, all sharing their perspectives on this moment.
I'll be getting one of the first copies.
Yeah. Number one.
Ah, attaboy. Okay. BJ Hollers, thanks so much, as usual. Midwest Artist Academy, you can find more. What's the website again?
MidwestArtistAcademy.org.
Now that's easy to remember. Good job. Thanks again, BJ.
Thank you so much, Al.
Create, collaborate, celebrate the Midwest Artist Academy. By the way, this Sunday at 1 o'clock, they have a Zoom chat that's called Meet Your Mentors. And you'll be able to meet all of the people who are going to be mentoring, which is why the title says that. Go to the website, MidwestArtistAcademy.org. I think you'll find links and how to join and passcodes and all that other good stuff. So that sounds like fun. Kind of a neat gift from parents and grandparents that will blow them away, don't you think? And give back for years. Coming up, the Master Singers during our unique holiday season, and next, Helping Hands, where and when they're needed most. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, committed to delivering an authentic and enjoyable automotive experience. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, and at MarquardtToyota.com. Hey, here's a reminder. The Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra's CD and book set, Carnival of the Animals, Eau Claire Edition, is available for purchase. Kind of a cool gift for anyone, especially young people who attended the live concert last January. You can get yours or several at the local store in downtown Eau Claire or at the Echo website, EauClaireChamberOrchestra.com. So much to think about this time of year, and especially this time of this year. I suppose we can be forgiven for neglecting things we normally ponder. But those less fortunate and with no place like home should always be on our minds, in our hearts, and in our plans for finding ways to help. Lutheran Social Services does a great job of finding ways to help and then implementing them. I was surprised to hear about all they do, and I think you will be too. I called Jill Chafee, who helps lead their community-based services. Your organization has one of those names that does a nice job of giving us an idea of what you have to offer, Lutheran Social Services. But I have an idea that the name is only the tip of the iceberg, And the rest of the iceberg will become visible as we talk here. But let's begin with the fact that you are Vice President of Community-Based Services. That is specific. First, what are community-based services? And secondly, are there other kinds of services offered?
Absolutely. Community-based services is a variety of services that are offered very much in the community, so to speak. We also have other areas of our programming that are offered as residential or out-of-home care. And so for us, community-based services are those services that really seek to serve people in their communities where they live, work, go to school, all of those pieces. And our goal is always to keep people in the most natural environment mm-hmm. in order to have the most success with our service delivery. And then we have a real variety, actually. We offer a lot of mental health and substance abuse services throughout the state of Wisconsin, in addition to some things like children's long-term support, mm-hmm. birth to three. We have public adoption as well as foster care. And so we have a real range of services throughout the state of Wisconsin. Some of our mental health services are more therapy-based, evidence-based practices around therapy. Others are skill building in the community, while others might be things like helping people to take their medications consistently, those kinds of things. Okay. Our substance use services are very comprehensive, everything from the comprehensive substance abuse in an outpatient basis to a residential basis to programs where we offer drug testing opportunities for accountability as part of a treatment process.
And LSS, we'll shorten it every once in a while, been around a long time?
Hoping to celebrate next year, 140 years in business.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, we've been around quite a while.
You don't have any people who have been there the whole time. I'm willing
Absolutely not.
I'm willing to wager. Well, we like to get to know our guests as well as we can, and we're getting to know Lutheran Social Services well. But now let's focus on you. You have quite an extensive resume in what it is you do and have been doing it for quite a while.
Yes, I actually have, I think, a nice balance with public and private sector work. Something that I think has been really nice throughout my career because I can really understand the perspective of the county-based government as well as the private sector and some of the service delivery that we provide to those contracted agencies.
Okay.
So throughout my career, I have had the opportunity to learn both perspectives. And I think it just helps to create those partnerships that really enhance our ability to work together to, you know, meet common needs. My work at Lutheran Social Services really also fosters that.
And those two kinds of entities, they are well known for working well together?
They work together a lot. And I think over the years, what I have seen is those type of partnerships are absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
As we talk more about positive avenues and some of the things we do for people who are experiencing homelessness, I think it's absolutely critical.
Mm-hmm.
The partnerships need to happen in order for us to use the limited resources we have in the best way possible.
Because there's usually an ongoing public-private debate, you know.
Right. You know, I think we need each other.
Sure.
And I think this whole pandemic has only amplified that need.
Mm-hmm.
And demonstrated to us we can't function without each other in the current system and the service delivery. And in order to meet people's needs and meet them where they are in the community, we have to work together to make that happen.
Yeah, let's hope we emerge from all this with a new spirit of partnership.
You know, I think it's absolutely necessary. And I think the more we all keep our eye on our common goal, as we do that, hopefully we can accentuate some of our similarities and focus on the goal versus accentuating the differences or exacerbating challenges that we could really work through better.
Sure. And the worst thing that could happen is you spend so much time debating public versus private that you lose sight of the people you're trying to help.
Absolutely. And I have found the partnerships that we have needed to have, certainly during this pandemic, have been there. I think all entities recognize that we are in a crisis and we need to leave that baggage behind. And if it existed, we need to work through that and move forward. And I really have found that in the community as we work through these issues.
The title Lutheran Social Services, the moniker Lutheran at the beginning of that name, might lead some to think that it's limited in some way. Tell me about the width and breadth and length of your influence.
We are absolutely not limited. The Lutheran Social Services is supported by a number of the Evangelical Lutheran Churches of America, and therefore that is the Lutheran. However, there is no religious requirement. We really look at spirituality as the way the person we're serving looks at their spirituality. There is no religious connotation or anything necessary in order for someone to receive services.
Okay, good. We're on the phone with Jill Chafee. She's Vice President of Community-Based Services for Lutheran Social Services. And I did not mean to emphasize the word Lutheran there because, again, we just we just clarified that. So let me say it quickly. Lutheran Social Services. There we go.
Yes.
All right. The news release that perked up my interest had to do with homelessness and how it's being affected by our pandemic. Many shelters are not available because being so would defy the rules of the COVID road. Tell me what your fine organization is doing and how it's adjusted.
First, to clarify, Al, I just want to make sure Lutheran Social Services doesn't provide the shelter piece. We have, for approximately 30 years in the Eau Claire community, provided day services.
Okay.
And so when the pandemic began, we actually began a stronger partnership with Catholic Charities.
Okay.
And Catholic Charities provides services through Sojourner House in Eau Claire. They have the shelter or the overnight component, and we have the during-the-day services. We brought those two pieces together in a partnership because we recognized that as we work through the pandemic, we were going to need to at times have situations where maybe we can't allow other folks to visit during the day because of potential COVID and all of those things. And so we needed to modify some of the things we were doing. And we really looked at this partnership with Catholic Charities to be a good opportunity for us to, again, keep our eye focused on what are the needs of the people experiencing homelessness. And in doing so, we really took the time to say, okay, let's work together. We'll provide services during the day at Lutheran Social Services, and Catholic Charities will provide the shelter overnight. And so when the pandemic began, we started looking at the way in which we could do that. That's kind of how things changed during the pandemic. Now, as an organization, LSS is also thinking longer term. There has been, you know, a growth in our people experiencing homelessness in the Eau Claire area. We recognize we need to be better partners with our community. And over the last few months, we've been having some pretty good community discussions around how to create some more service accessibility for the people that we're serving so that we potentially could help them have the tools to move out of homelessness and into a more stable home for the long term.
Okay, and there's a good start, Catholics and Lutherans working together.
Exactly.
To further clarify your involvement in it, tell us some of the things that you provide to individuals.
Prior to COVID, we were offering things like a lunch meal several days a week. Another organization we work with continuously is Community Table, because they provide some of those meals as well. We had on-site also a food shelf, some small groups taking place. Some folks experiencing some challenges with substance use would participate in some of those group discussions and peer-led discussions. What we're hoping to do is transition and do more of that, Al, having a lot of opportunities of other services also being a part of what we do. We, over the past year, have been working with Eau Claire County to provide some crisis stabilization services at the facility as well, recognizing that a number of people who experience homelessness also have mental health or substance use needs, utilizing some of those crisis services to help people stabilize and then, again, move them to maybe a home, have a more stable treatment plan, some of those types of things so that people can live a more stabilized life in the community.
So to further clarify, there is shelter available. It's just a different form now.
You got it. It's all in the one location. We had to move to a different location so that it would provide enough physical distancing. We actually have moved our location twice already in order to allow for enough physical distance for the volume of people that we're serving. Typically, we're looking at around 60 people per day. Making sure we have that 6-foot distance around folks and that people are wearing masks and doing all the proper procedures. We did have to make first we were at Hobbs Ice Arena. Now we are on Claremont at the former grocery store. And so we've had to make some adjustments for that distancing. But we still have the services during the day and the shelter in the evening. Prior to that, we had two different locations.
So you've had to adjust.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
We've learned a lot about being very adaptive and being very flexible. The people we serve teach us about that all the time. Their needs are just so significant. What does it mean to not have a place where you know you're going to sleep tonight? What does it mean to not have the same place that might also have a shower or a bathroom? And just some of the things that I think day to day I take for granted, to be conscious of that is really humbling and very important. That's a big obstacle. So how can we bring other services to our location so that people don't need to go to maybe six different places to get their needs met?
Yeah.
A couple conversations we've been having is, can workforce development come in for a certain period of time every month? And it's really trying to improve those services post-COVID.
Sadly, most of what we hear about today and what we're focused on is pandemic, but the reality is that none of what was here before the spotlight shifted has gone away. I mean, it's still here. It still needs our attention, and those compromised are in an even tougher situation.
Absolutely. And I would say I feel as though the pandemic has exposed some of our weaker areas, areas where we didn't have resources before, and the complexity with which we were needing to serve before is only amplified by the pandemic. And so it's been an interesting process for us, I think one where we will learn and grow quite a bit. At the same time, we've stayed pretty focused on, okay, what are the basic needs? How do we get those needs met? And what does that mean to us long term? Never forgetting about how do we shift our focus so that long term, we're also being thoughtful about what do people who are experiencing homelessness need.
Yes, some things have exposed weaknesses, but there are, and we've talked about this with almost every guest we've had on in the last 8-9 months. We talk about silver linings, and if nothing else, we can now empathize, at least on some level, with what it's like to live with some limitations. I mean, things have been taken away from us, things we took for granted. And rather than complain, maybe we should say, okay, now I know what it's like to be frustrated and helpless. I'm going to use that understanding and insight going forward. Chances are my life will go back to normal someday. It'll get cushy again, but I'm not going to forget those for whom comfortable is just a dream.
Absolutely, Al. I really appreciate that perspective. I couldn't agree more.
There, but for the grace of God go I, that's one. Walk a mile in my shoes, that's another.
That's right.
That's what we should think about. We can donate to Lutheran Social Services. How do we do that?
You can go to our website, lsswith.org. We really appreciate it. We have had so much support from people in the community. So important as we think about mental health, substance use, people experiencing homelessness. All of these different things are compounded during a pandemic. Anything people can do, we would appreciate it.
It's a special time of year. It's a very, very good time to think of other people. So let's do that, folks. Jill Chafee, thanks so much for being with us on WPR.
Well, thank you, Al. We so appreciate Wisconsin Public Radio for talking about the people whom we serve. Thank you so much, Al.
That's important stuff. This is Spectrum West. The Master Singers aren't performing this holiday season, but they're far from silent. You can listen anytime, anywhere. That's next. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank, offering fixed-rate mortgages, bridge loans, construction loans, and more. Loan officers Dawn and Susie are dedicated to providing personalized service. CharterBank.bank, invested in partnerships.
Was in those ships of freedom.
Oh, the Master Singers aren't going to allow a Christmas season to come and go without being a part of it, even at a time when their legendary performances are COVID-19 disallowed. They are posting their sound on social media to remind us and them what's waiting at the end of the tunnel. In the meantime, we'll listen, we'll recall the last time we engaged at a concert, and we'll look forward to the next. For an update, I spoke with director Gary Schwartzoff. You know what my first question is? So what's new? And I say that very tongue-in-cheek because, of course, the last 9 months have been nothing but new and novel and weird and hopefully once in a lifetime. So tell me how the management and members of the Master Singers have been coping and adjusting.
Well, Nancy and I wanted to reach out to the membership. We've done so in multiple ways. One of was contact them individually. So we've called the 40 members just to see how they're doing. When we went into the phone call, we knew that two of the members that had COVID, in reality, five have had or currently are dealing with the health concerns. So that's obviously a major concern.
Sure.
News on the national level from the CDC, from the Eau Claire health community, et cetera, has guided us to say that it's not possible for us to meet here in spring semester, January 2021, for rehearsals to present at Choral Images in March 2021. It's just not in anyone's best interest. It wouldn't lead to a concert. No one could nor should come to it. So it would be a virtual performance. Yeah. At any rate, the executive committee decided that we would not do that, and the season is officially a wrap.
Huh. So what other performances in 2020 and maybe other special opportunities that could have come along have you had to postpone or cancel? Three or four normal concerts a year?
Three subscription concerts in this season. There are many more performances than that, and all of them have been canceled. I mean, it started with America My Home, our fall concert series in October. Lessons and Carols would have begun last Saturday, December 5th in Minneapolis, and then this week there would be three additional performances here in the Chippewa Valley. There, of course, are all gone. The recording session, which is, I think, it's absolutely a labor of love, labor for everyone and love for many of us.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work over two nights. Everyone kind of, over the years, wonder why we're doing all this and taking all the time to do this. And I always used to say to them, we're doing this for posterity. Well, lo and behold, it came knocking.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can live on, that is, provide additional future performances of the music has been beneficial to us. We've been posting past performances of individual pieces on YouTube, being shared throughout social media. And as you know, I think Wisconsin Public Radio has picked up on this, and they've run four concerts here between Thanksgiving and Christmas. We're very appreciative of.
I have those upcoming dates, and I'll share them with our audience and you in a moment. Among others, you brought up the concerts that you normally have. The Master Singers are noteworthy for doing widely anticipated performances. The biggies, Easter and Christmas. Take me back to last spring. Were you able to get in a concert last spring?
It was our dress rehearsal in early March, and obviously the news was growing large in front of all of us, the health concern. To continue, by that time, that choir out in, I think it was Washington State, had its rehearsal and went ahead with a performance, and the amount of people that got sick from that. So at the dress rehearsal for Choral Images 2020, at the end of the rehearsal, I called the exec committee, which all sings in the choir together, along with two medical doctors who sing in the choir, and said to them, look, folks, we have to. Look at this. This is real. Should we be going forward? Should we even have been here tonight doing this dress rehearsal? And I think they were, for the most part, quite surprised by all that. It was still quite new. And the two doctors agreed with me and said, we have no business being here in community, in singing and spreading this, nor is it responsible for us to offer this in a concert. So following that dress rehearsal, we canceled the concerts.
And I'm sure back then it felt as if you were canceling that one and it felt terrible. But I'm sure, as you did, and I think all of us did, we kind of expected that you'd be able to keep your Christmas dates. But that didn't happen either, did it?
Sure. Whatever it was, I'm not sure it was called a pandemic at that time, would fade, move on, pass, and we would all be back to normal sometime in the near future. But that was not to be the case.
Gary Schwartzoff with us. We are talking about the Master Singers, where they've been, where they are. And, well, I don't know if anybody can talk about where they're going, but we're just going to have to wait and see. Wherever it is, you can bet that they'll be back. Gary, have you engaged the group or yourself in any virtual singing or hanging out, or do your numbers kind of prevent that to get the whole group together?
Well, we have talked about that somewhat. We started, as you perhaps know, the home for the Master Singers is First Congregational Church, mm-hmm. 310 Broadway in Eau Claire, which is a church where I serve as the director of music at the church. The chancel choir also would have presented its Christmas choral Sunday on December 6th. And what we've been doing is we've invited members of, obviously, the chancel choir and also the Master Singers to form a virtual choir. We have produced to date 3 Christmas works we hope to use here on December 24th in the church's Lesson and Carols.
Oh, good.
It's technically a challenging process done by many, certainly not unique to us. But for that reason, I asked the members of both choirs to join together in this. They work out of the same buildings. Thought it'd be a good way to bring them together during the holiday season. 2 of those pieces will be part of the Lesson and Carol service on December 24th. And now that we've been through, shall we say, the test case, we are talking about producing maybe a Master Singer virtual choir experience coming up. So we're making efforts to do that through the good graces of the church. And Wesley McDermott, the engineer at the church, was very gracious with his time to do this. It's a very time-consuming process.
Oh, yeah.
To
yeah.
pull some 40 people together in a sense of unity after recording them individually.
Yeah. A while back, you talked about posting some YouTube. They're actually more audio than video, but they are on YouTube. The one that I looked at recently, I realize there's one since then, but the one that I watched was 2 performances of the piece All My Heart This Night Rejoices, and it was 2 separate arrangements. I was really taken by that. In fact, I listened to the first one, then I listened to the second one, and then I put them up side by side, and I started comparing arranging. And I thought it was so interesting how people see things and then decide to arrange them differently. And I thank you for posting all of this stuff, because it's not just nice to hear, but it gave us all something to do at a time when, you know, we're looking for something to do. Compare the 2 arrangements for me. They are both quite different. And I wonder, for people like the Master Singers, what it's like to perform 2 distinct versions or settings of the same piece.
I agree with you. The 2 pieces are compositionally quite different. The one by Z. Randall Stroop is a cappella, first of all, and has far more parts and is more divisive for the choir. Mm-hmm. The second piece by Trevor Mannard, he was the composer in residence of the Mass Singers a couple of years ago, so that's a commissioned work that we're very proud of. We asked them to write it for piano and French horn. We wanted to celebrate them as part of it. They are much different. I think the choir has equal joy and respect for each of them. The relationship, it's not just a relationship with the score, but it's also a relationship with the composer. Our time together with Z. Randall Stroop is long-standing, and we've had him here to work with choir, and he's actually, too, was a commissioned composer of the Master Singers. So there's a lot that goes into that framework of a single piece when you're looking at a composer and their relationship with the ensemble, and especially that piece. Uh-huh. That's the most beloved text of the holiday season, so that draws everyone near. And Trevor Manner's score is so fresh, and the winding of the various aspects of the ensemble, the choral parts, the French horn, the piano, that piece is a home run in the recent past in terms of available repertoire.
Sure.
Which has been the reason why we've commissioned works all the year. Yes, to present to our audiences, but also to present opportunities to the greater choral community to perform.
Yeah. Gerhardt, the guy who wrote it all. Now, when you say settings of a text by Paul Gerhardt, was he a lyricist or did he actually do music with it as well?
No, he's a lyricist. He's a wordsmith.
I always wonder about how people who wrote something originally would react to certain kinds of arranging of pieces. Is there a first version of someone who put that to music?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that from the perspective of a poet, one, if they're living, in this case, he's not.
But no.
There are poets who don't want their text set to music, and they're vehement about it. Robert Frost was an example in contemporary times. He was not in favor of having words set to music. Randall Thompson and the city of Amherst, Massachusetts, approached him about setting Frostiana for their, I think it was some major anniversary, 100th anniversary perhaps, of the city. Huh. And Robert Frost said no multiple times to Randall Thompson, and they kept working on him to join in the process and be collaborative. And eventually he yielded and said yes. Robert Frost came to the performance in Amherst with Randall conducting the performance with a community choir and sat in the front row, and everyone kind of knew the background, how concerned he was about it. They sang the seven movements of Frostiana at the end of it. Robert Frost stood up before the audience could applaud or respond, and Frost looked at Randall and said, "Sing it again."
Wow.
And they did. And
wow.
They did all seven movements. And then there are recent examples in the last, 20, 30 years where the Robert Frost Foundation has refused to have the text set by some very well-known composers. So not everyone, not all poets are in favor of it.
There might have been a disaster somewhere along the line, and
sure.
They heard about it.
Yep.
I wonder if anybody ever called him Bob Frost.
Much less Bobby. I doubt it.
Yeah. Gary Schwartzoff, our guest here on Spectrum West, and it's good to talk to him. The Master Singers have been a topic of ours for years. Gary, how about you personally during all this weird time? You have more time on your hands. Have you begun to do some of the things you never had time for, like maybe writing and arranging yourself, or what's going on?
I don't think that writing and arranging is my gift.
Okay.
I have written and arranged some things. We've performed them on campus when I was there, but I just don't feel that's my gift. We, being Nancy and I, we have actually moved. We're downsizing. That's been a very major project with unexpected turns along the way. Yeah. But it was something that needed to happen.
Well, good time to do it, I guess. This being the end of the year, of course, any time of the year is good, but a lot of people like to make donations at the end of the year. And, of course, your piggy bank, the Master Singers, that is, has not been replenished the way it might have been throughout the years. So donations, of course, are always appreciated.
Of course. That would be lovely. I mean, we continue to outreach with the broadcast on WPR yesterday. Over two weekends, we've sold a few CDs. That's nice. I mean, the sale of CDs or contributions to the Master Plan are always appreciated and can be found on themastersingers.net.
Performances on WPR, let's mention them, Sunday, December 13th at 1 p.m., Sunday, December 20th, also at 1 p.m., and then on Christmas Day at noon with Laurie Skelton. You're going to keep posting things on YouTube, are you?
Weekly.
That's W-E-E-K.
That's correct.
Thanks, Gary, so much. Happy holidays to you, and we're chomping at the bit to get back to your first live performance again. Thanks.
Thank you, Al.
Now, don't go anywhere, because we're going to leave you today with another of the very beautiful Master Singers songs, one of my favorites. But I want to remind you of a couple things. The annual December 8th John Lennon Beatles tribute from Thomas Smith and Friends in River Falls features 11 songs and a few poems, and it's available on YouTube. The River Falls Community Arts Base Holiday Boutique is virtual at the website rfcab.org and available through January 1st. And remember, award-winning actor and astounding musician Jeff Daniels performs an intimate virtual concert for the Heidi Center next Thursday, the 17th. That's at 8 p.m. Get all the details at cvca.net. Next week, special guest Garrison Keillor will be here to talk about his two new books, one an autobiography and the other a Lake Wobegon take on the times we're in. Plus more guests and more good stuff happening in the creative playground that we call Western Wisconsin. For now, thanks to Dean, to Kate, to Patrick, and to you. Visit us at WPR.org to find all the Spectrum West programs neatly archived. Keep in touch, take care of yourself, be good to each other by wearing a mask. We will be back next week. By the way, happy Hanukkah. And now to the Master Singers. Once again, I'm going to get selfish on the selection of the song to take us home here. This is from 10 years ago. Their concert, their Christmas concert, was called Lessons and Carols. And the title of the concert itself was Sweet Was the Song. And that's the song that I chose. Sweet Was the Song from 2010. These are the Master Singers. See you next week.
Sweet, sweet, she said.